Hello, you're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we are gay, and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies, and sometimes we talk about other stuff. I'm Erin, and I don't know what's wrong with me.
And I'm Erin, and Jesus Satan!
Jesus Satan, and praise the Lord, you got praise the whole church praising right outside your window.
Yeah, we're praising in Brooklyn right now. And so if you hear something in the background when I'm speaking, it's just that I got the church backing me up.
Which is very timely, actually, for our topic today, which is Thelma, the 2017 movie, not to be confused with another Sapphic classic, Thelma and Louise.
Erin, I started this movie and I was like, this is not about Thelma and Louise.
You thought it was? Really?
I really thought it was.
Erin.
I know you told me about this movie and somehow I forgot. And then I was like, what? Why is it a Thelma and Louise based horror movie? And then I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, not at all. No. Have you ever seen Thelma and Louise?
I haven't. I was excited to watch it. I watched this movie.
We should watch Thelma and Louise at some point. I've never seen it. You've never seen it. It's like a kind of a movie that's about female friendship and feminism more than lesbianism, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I know that they do kiss, and I know that it's also starring Susan Sarandon, who just came out as bisexual, like, in the last year. So
yeah.
We should watch.
So what's up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you've seen Thelma and Louise, please email us at erin@gazegaze.com and tell us your thoughts.
But until then, we're going to talk about the 2017 movie Thelma, which is nothing like Thelma and Louise at all. But it is very religious. Also, I really feel like I should apologize for being a week late. I would like to speak my truth, which is that I got so distracted by work and by the fact that my partner and I are moving in together in a week, which is very exciting. Everybody clap.
Clap, clap, clap.
But I got so distracted that for a moment I forgot that I even had a podcast. So that's how you know that it's bad. And there was one morning that I literally was packing up my stuff and getting ready to leave for work. And I had my hand on the doorknob. And suddenly, I don't know how that like jogged it for me, but I literally thought, wait a minute, I have a podcast. Is there something I should be doing for my podcast? But oh no, I have to go to work. And then I got to work and checked my phone and you had messaged me and you were like, Erin, when can you do the podcast?
That's why there's two of us.
That's why there's two of us. Two Erins to two cover Erins. All the bases.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the bases could not be covered quickly enough because by that point, I had already lost it. It was too late and we just had to delay a week.
It's okay. Honestly, it is really funny that last year we like missed one episode and I was all geared up when we went into this year. I was like, we're not going to miss a single episode. And then I proceeded to trip, fall down the stairs. And I've made us skip so many fucking episodes by my life falling apart. So I'm, you know, it happens.
It does.
It's fine.
You did not, I should clarify, you did not actually fall down the stairs.
I did not fall down the stairs. That is metaphorically, I fell down the stairs.
Yeah. Anyway.
Even though when I broke my toe, I don't think we delayed an episode.
I don't think we did. What episode was that? I remember you were talking about your toe. You were talking about it on the podcast. You were like,
oh my goodness,
but you didn't talk about it until after it had already healed. You were like, my toe is better. And I was like, what? Like,
yeah. That's how it goes.
Yeah. Okay.
I
broke my toe.
I love going through a major to moderate life event and then retroactively telling people about it. And they're like, you went through what?
I don't know if you've really done that to me that much other than the toe.
You're the exception.
Oh, that's so nice. I'm so glad to be the exception to the rule, actually.
Wait, this is funny, not funny, I guess. This is neutral. It is an anecdote, I guess. My friend got married recently, and I was asked to speak at her rehearsal dinner with a couple of my other friends. And so we were writing the speech, and I was like, don't worry, guys, even though I'm dyslexic, I'm gonna do my best. I'm not gonna stutter. I'm gonna read this so well. And my friends turned to me and they're like, "You're dyslexic."
See? Wait, that was the one thing that I really didn't know about. But that's different because that's not like a major life event. That's just something that you've been living with forever.
For me, it's not news. It's not interesting. And it doesn't come up.
For me, it was news that I learned while we were recording.
And actually, due to the podcast, actually, it was very easy for me to read the speech. And I was like, I can't believe this is happening to me.
Wow. Oh, my God. See, the podcast is helping you in so many different ways.
It's helping me. Woo.
Woo.
Speaking of reading, are you ready for me to read this description?
Yeah, but first I can go through the content warnings.
Yeah, let's do it.
So this movie has a lot to do with religious trauma, including abusive and controlling parents, attempted suicide, infant death, and the attempted murder of a child also is included. Biggest thing that I wish that I had known going into this is that this movie has a massive flashing light problem. I'll just say that outright, honestly, because it's a movie about seizures then has a scene about inducing a seizure in somebody where they literally show like the most obnoxious flashing lights that probably actually could induce a seizure if you watched it. Callous and like not well thought out, in my opinion, especially because, again, if you're making a movie about seizures, probably a good number of people who have seizures are going to want to see the movie. So just something to consider if you decide to go watch this after listening to this episode. But also, I think this movie is really good. This is one of the ones where I'm kind of like, you should watch it before we spoil it for you.
I agree. I really liked this. And I'm not like a huge horror movie person, but this was more just like a suspenseful kind of mystery.
Yeah, I had heard that it was like a suspense thriller horror, so I kind of expected it to be scarier or more tense than it actually was. I had Googled Thelma, and one of the, you know how Google's like, are these some questions that you want to look at? We have some other questions that people have asked. Here are those. One of the questions, how scary is Thelma? And here's the words from TheVerge.com. The film is scary at times, and there are moments that are downright horrifying. One scene involving an infant has been stuck in my brain ever since I saw the movie. I guess that's fair. I kind of forgot about that, to be quite honest.
That one, the scenes with the baby are actually really tense and scary. It was like impending doom was what I was feeling. I was like, no, this baby, baby's going to get wrecked.
I knew that was, you know it's going to happen. There's
I know, but I didn't know how it was going to happen. I was like, is it going to be bloody? Is it going to be like, I don't know.
It was not bloody.
Yeah, but it was not bloody. It is bloodless.
Yeah, but still sad. It's more still sad so than scary sad. To me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, so Thelma opens with a girl and her father on a hunting trip. We come to see that the man is planning to kill her, but he ends up changing his mind and not being able to do it in the end.
That scene is more poignant to me and more stressful than the later scene with the infant death. Literally holding a hunting rifle to her head, planning to take him while she's looking in the other direction. It's so scary.
It's very scary. Years later, we see college freshman Thelma. She appears very lonely at school, with no friends to hang out with. She is othered, presumably partly due to her family's strict religious beliefs. Her parents call in often to check in on her, and she comes off very cold to her mother, who we see uses a wheelchair. One day at study hall, she has a seizure, but she doesn't want her parents to know about this. The girl who is sitting next to her when she had the seizure introduces herself to Thelma the next day. This girl's name is Anya, and she adds Thelma on Facebook. Thelma goes to a nearby bar after seeing Anya post about being there on Facebook, and they bump into each other. Anya invites Thelma to have drinks with her group of friends, but when the group sees that Thelma is just drinking soda, they poke some fun at her. They question her beliefs, though Thelma is able to play it off. And then her and Anya go and dance together. Thelma's mom calls, but Thelma doesn't answer. And then this prompts her dad to call, and he says that her mom is nervous, that she didn't answer, and that her mom is in a lot of pain. And he just seems really displeased with her, that she was like out and about and not answering their phone calls. So this causes Thelma to go home. In bed, she sees visions of Anya. And then when she gets up and goes to her window, she sees that Anya is outside of her dorm room, like outside of the dorm building, I mean. And so she goes down to meet her. And when she does, the lights above them, like the street lamps, start to flicker. And Thelma has another seizure. So with that, Anya helps her back to her room. And they end up sleeping in the same single bed together, where Thelma secretly strokes Anya's hair. The next morning, Thelma asks Anya why she was outside her window last night. And Anya says that it's because Thelma texted her, but that's actually not true when she checks her phone to see. So the two just kind of write it off because Anya was really drunk and she claims not to remember. So they're just like, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, don't think about it.
But after this, the two, they've like bonded and they start hanging out together a lot, even drinking wine together. Ooh. Thelma, she starts drinking and smoking and swearing when she hangs out with Anya. The two of them go to the opera together with Anya's mom, too. And it's there that Thelma finds out she was given the invitation because Anya's boyfriend and her broke up. Like, they're not together anymore. So in the dark of the theater, Anya holds out her hand. And Thelma kind of seems like she's considering taking it, but doesn't. And then Anya just grabs her hand to hold it. But this causes Thelma to shake. There's this hanging contraption in the top of the theater, I think, just for, like, lights. Noise control. Oh, it's lights?
I think so, yeah. Okay.
There's something. Anyway, and that starts, like, swinging like it's going to fall, but it doesn't. And Thelma, she gets up and she leaves. But on her way out, Anya comes after her and kisses her. Thelma just immediately gives in and starts kissing her back very passionately. But afterwards, she almost throws up. And she rushes home after that to pray and call her father. She doesn't tell him about the kiss. She instead tells him that she had two beers with friends. And he sighs at this, but he says that it should be okay. She needs to not lose who she is. The next day, she goes to worship, and then she goes to a party with a boy. Anya is at the party, too. We find out that Thelma has been avoiding Anya, and she continues to avoid her, even after Anya confronts her about it. Thelma, in a group, including Anya, smoke a joint together, and the boy that she came with encourages her to get high, and after smoking, Anya comes to her and kisses her, and the two begin to make out. And Anya's getting kind of handsy, and then the room blurs, and it's just the two of them. And then suddenly, like, the snake comes out, and it wraps itself around Thelma's neck, and it makes its way into her mouth. But then she's being, like, shaken out of the trance by another girl. The blunt was just a regular cigarette. It wasn't weed. They were making fun of her. And so Thelma, she throws up, and she goes home where she cries. The next day, she goes in for a CT scan.
For her seizures.
Yes, this is true. The doctor says she needs to see an epilepsy specialist and be observed in the hospital for a few days. The doctor reviews her medical history and tells her that she had a seizure as a child. Thelma has no memory of this, though. Her father always took care of her as a child, since he's a general practitioner. We flash back then to Thelma's childhood. Her mother has a newborn baby boy and is able to move around without the use of a wheelchair. When the baby is left alone for a minute, it cries, and Thelma closes her eyes against the sound. Then suddenly, the baby is gone. Her mother questions her about where the baby is, and Thelma looks to the couch, and then suddenly the baby is under the couch, screaming more than ever. Her parents are able to rescue it, though. Back in the present, Thelma goes to the hospital for observation. They need to force a seizure in order to monitor her brainwaves, and they do so by asking her about her love life in order to stress her out. Thelma thinks of Anya, and the stereo in Anya's apartment turns on. As she continues to think about her, Thelma also thinks about praying away her feelings that she has for Anya. In Anya's apartment, the window explodes and Anya disappears, with the window reforming after she's gone. Back in the hospital, we see Thelma's floating, but no, actually, she's just having a seizure. The doctors determined that Thelma is having non-epileptic seizures. They can be caused by stress or trauma. Thelma says that her grandmother had a history of mental illness, but she died a long time ago. The doctors say that actually, according to their records, she's alive in a nearby facility. Thelma researches seizures and finds out that they used to be thought to be possession by gods or demons. She also looks up the place that her grandma's at and she goes to visit. Once there, she finds her grandmother too medicated to be responsive. The nurse tells her that the high dosage is due to her grandmother having delusions, such as disappearing her husband and giving herself cancer. Her father knows about the high medication dosage but isn't concerned.
One of the things that stands out to me in this scene is that the nurse, like, specifically uses the language that it's like she thought that she caused things that were her fault.
Yeah, yeah.
She thought that everything that happened around her was her fault and her doing, that it went badly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or kind of as all this is happening, Anya's phone has been going right to voicemail when Thelma tries to call her. Anya's mom soon reaches out to Thelma, asking if she's seen Anya because Anya's missing. Thelma goes to Anya's room and finds the door unlocked. In the window there, she also sees that some of Anya's hair is trapped in the glass.
After skipping the epilepsy scene, I was so confused. Oh, I was why is there hair on the glass? Like,
yeah. Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's the only thing that got me.
All right, well, now you know.
Yeah.
So after this, Thelma calls her mom and she has to come home. She tells her parents about the seizures, but they already know, and they always feared this might happen. They've already sedated the tea that they gave her, and so she soon starts to fall unconscious. In the grips of near sleep, her father tells her about her baby brother. He disappeared from the bath as a child while Thelma was still in bed. Her parents, they looked for him, but they couldn't find him. And when Thelma got up from bed, she pointed to where her brother was, under the ice in the lake. The pain from losing her son caused Thelma's mother to attempt suicide by jumping off a bridge, which made her need the use of a wheelchair. So Thelma's father starts sedating his daughter with medication. He also makes her pray for forgiveness. Thelma admits to loving Anya, but her father says she's wrong. She was just lonely, and Anya doesn't love her either. He claims, deep down, Thelma must have wanted Anya to disappear. That night, her mother says that it's hopeless with Thelma. She implies that they need to kill her. Thelma's father starts making arrangements for her murder. Thelma sees that he's planning something and asks to be let go, but he does not answer. The next day, he goes out on his boat to have a cigarette, but he catches on fire. And to try to quell the flames, he throws himself into the water. But whenever he resurfaces, he spontaneously combusts again. So Thelma awakes to this image in horror. And when she goes down to the lake, the boat is empty. She dives to the bottom of the lake, but resurfaces in the pool at her school with Anya there to greet her. And they kiss. Thelma awakes drenched at the side of the lake. Inside of her home, she can see that Anya is calling her on her cell phone. When she goes inside the house, her mom confronts her, asking where her husband is, but Thelma says nothing. She just touches her mom's face and her leg, and then she leaves. In chasing after her, her mother realizes that she has the use of her legs again. And then back at college, Thelma's outside and she's waiting for Anya, and she imagines Anya coming up to her and kissing her on the neck. And then that happens, and the two walk off together. And that's the movie.
Yeah.
You can manifest a girlfriend.
You can. I read a Letterboxd review that was something like, yes, this is the story of all queer women healing your mother, killing your father, and manifesting your girlfriend.
Honestly.
Just
honestly.
So true. Yeah. You mentioned the scene where after her parents basically recapture her, yeah, right, Thelma, mm-hmm, and they start sedating her and drugging her with a tea, and it's while she's sedated that she confesses that she was in love with Anya, and then her dad is like,
no, you weren't.
Yeah, exactly. No, you weren't. But it's not even no, you weren't. It's like somebody who has the powers that you have can, like, change other people and will them to do what you want. So you made her, you manipulated her into loving you. And like, you should feel bad about that because it's just like, it's just your supernatural powers. Like, why else would she have broken up with her boyfriend? Why else would she have come up and started talking to you and all of this stuff? And it's like both a little bit gaslighty and to a degree as the viewer, it's like, but it's also kind of a little bit true. Cree left a comment on our tweet about Thelma and said, I saw it in theaters when it first came out and I loved it. I personally found the way it ended pretty ambiguous and more interesting because of it. So I was a bit surprised when people posting about it on Tumblr didn't seem to view it the same way.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out, I guess, what the opposing sentiment to the ending really was. But as I was watching it, I was trying to think about why that might be. And I think it has to come down to the manipulation aspect, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Like the fact that she still ended up with Anya, even though there's this kind of like, ooh, but did she manipulate her into being really like?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, yeah, a lot of the like articles I saw writing about this, like their ending of the movie is very much, and then she gets her girlfriend and they're happy together. And I wanted to write it out just kind of like as it happens.
Yeah.
You know, Thelma imagining something and then it happening, because I find the ambiguous nature very interesting for this. But, and I also think that in the scene where she, you know, she touches her mother's legs and then also mm-hmm. her head, I think that was touching the head was like rewriting the mother's memories of you. I've always been your only child and you've never had a husband and you love me.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I guess then the question I feel like that everybody would be thinking about is that a bad thing, right? Mm. And the world is not necessarily a bad or a good thing. It just is a thing, right?
Yeah.
That's my interpretation anyway.
Interesting. I would think it is a bad thing because you are taking away somebody's free will potentially. But I also see this as like Anya and Thelma had a very legitimate friendship that then seemed to bloom into love. It seemed kind of also with the Facebook posts, like there were some posts with her with like girls. And so it seemed like maybe she was bisexual and like it's not like Thelma made her like girls or something.
Right.
I think that this was something natural that happened between them. The aspect of this that I love to think about is when Thelma brought Anya back, was that Anya? Like, ooh.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know.
I don't know.
And also, I should clarify that when I said, is it a good thing or a bad thing? I was thinking specifically about the mother. Because then it's also coping with your childhood trauma and dealing with like the people that hurt you when you were growing up. Like the Anya thing is very separate from that.
I'm just
thinking about the parents.
Yeah. No, for the mom, yes, I totally agree with you. And I hate to say it, I'm like in therapy, I think there is obviously there's a lot of data around like you got to process your emotions. That's how you feel, like that's how you heal from them. That's how you can move forward. I love also reading about research, which is like, if we hypnotize you and you forget about this, it will actually cure your PTSD.
Yeah, I know. Yep.
Man. Sorry, that's really dark. But
no, it's okay. Let's repress anyway. It so much.
We'll repress it so much.
Think about it ever again, and then everything will be fine.
Yes. What's that movie? Spotless Sunshine.
Oh, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless
Mind. Yeah.
I've never seen that, actually.
I've just seen it once. I liked it. I thought it was good.
Doesn't it have like an interesting soundtrack? I feel like that's what I've heard.
I don't remember.
Is it a full Ben Harper soundtrack?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm going to look this up. If it's Ben Harper, I'm going to lose my mind. Jim Carrey's in it?
Yeah. He does a good job.
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo's in it?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
And Elijah Wood.
I don't remember that either.
Who did the soundtrack? I'm just going to keyword search for Ben Harper.
Yeah.
No, that's not it. I'm not thinking of Ben Harper. I'm thinking of...
I don't even know who that is.
It was Beck. I wasn't thinking of Beck, though. I was thinking of someone else, but I can't remember who it is. It was
the way he said that is so funny.
Beck does everything. He loves doing movie soundtracks.
Is the anime Beck about Beck?
No, it's not. But it is about musicians.
Okay. I didn't think it was, but I was curious.
Did you know that Beck, when he was born, he's changed the spelling of his first name. It was initially just B-E-K. There was no C in it. And he was the son of an American visual artist named Bibby Hansen, who was in Andy Warhol's The Factory, and she was a Warhol superstar.
Wow.
Yeah,
very I did not know this.
Yeah, Beck's mom.
Beck.
Formerly B-E-K Beck.
Shrimp-trusting.
Very shrimp-trusting. I've learned so much. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, sorry, that's such a big tangent. But
no, it's fine. It's this gaze, baby. Tangents are a part of the process. So I don't watch a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
We've discussed this before. So just like in looking up stuff about this movie, Carrie, the 1976 mm-hmm. horror movie, came up a lot.
Yeah, I've never seen Carrie.
I've seen half of Carrie, like, on TV.
It's kind of the same idea, though, right? Of, like, but, like, teen girl who's bullied by her peers. Is that it? Who
yeah,
has,
it's so,
develops, like, psychic powers.
Yeah, exactly. So she has a very religious, like, mother who kind of keeps her innocent and, like, doesn't tell her, like, anything about the world or herself even, or like her bodily functions. So like a key scene is when she gets her period and she doesn't understand what's happening, and then that others her from her like schoolmates, who then start to make fun of her and then terrorize her, and then she develops her psychic powers and kills everybody.
Yeah, kind of a different ending from Thelma.
Yes.
I'm kind of surprised I didn't see more people talking about Matilda with this with this movie in comparison, because that's another movie that's kind of similar tonally, right? Child abuse, trying to find yourself, developing psychic powers, but having more fun with it. It's fun to have psychic powers. Getting back at the people that hurt you, and then finding your family and where you belong.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Also very similar tonally.
I like that.
Yeah. So much of this movie is about individual power and strength.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, about fear and desire. Because, too, so she kind of has this power of manifestation. And, you know, she disappears her little brother. And, you know, like, as a child, you might be jealous of your sibling because they need more attention or, you know, something like that. The part of your brain that understands consequences has not been developed yet.
Yep.
So, like, I thought it was really interesting that, like, especially since it's something that her father brings up, where he's like, you must have hated Anya to make her disappear. And we know that's not the case. Like, Thelma really loved Anya. And I think it's the same thing with her brother. Like, you know, it's not that she hated him. It's just that she didn't understand what she was doing necessarily.
Yeah. There's so much in this movie that speaks to the intention behind how you use your power. Right?
Mm, yeah.
And being raised in an environment, too, where you were kind of, like, looked down upon, where people are afraid of you, where people are also literally considering killing you, as her dad does in the first opening scene. It's like, that would be a child's natural reaction to being raised in an environment like that, where it's like, if other people want me gone, then it makes sense for me to want other people to be gone, too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I also think it's interesting, and the reading of the movie that I had is that once again, like, it's been revealed that Thelma has used her power again and her dad is making her pray, he said that he thought it would be okay because she hadn't used her power since, like, she found the Lord, which to me read as, like, after this traumatic experience with her brother is when her family became very, very religious.
Yes.
Key for making her gay.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, having sapphic thoughts, because, yeah, like, religious conservatism as control is just, like, a very queer theme, you know?
Yeah. And, too, it's, like, I feel like so much of the character development of the parents is that they always think that they are doing the right thing.
Yes.
Right?
For sure.
And they think that they're doing the best by their daughter by doing this when it's clear that they're not, and they're not listening to her in that.
Of course. Yeah. Like, we are completely controlling her, and that is stopping her from using her powers. And it's not that, like, she's just so suffocated that, like, she has no desires. Because a character moment, or like a scene that I love, actually, is when she first goes back to her dorm room, because her dorm room is completely empty. There's nothing on the shelves. There's no furniture. And she's living out of her suitcase. Like, she has no personality, and that's causing her to be lonely because she can't connect with anybody.
Yeah.
Because she's, like, so scared and unable to express herself. Mm-hmm. Like, damn.
Can we talk about the parallel between, like, seizures and orgasms in this movie? Because I feel like that's pretty clear as well. And, like, the seizures are occurring when she's, like, experiencing moments of delight most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, the first time it happens is when it's the first time she sees Anya in the library. Yeah. That's the first time she ever has a seizure. And then, again, when Anya shows up at her apartment late at night.
Yeah.
And again, also in the hospital, when she's thinking about Anya, it's Anya, 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 right? And
Anya, Anya, Anya.
There's also kind of this idea of, like, the cataclysmic experience of discovering yourself, right?
Yeah,
as being another part of that.
For sure.
I just think it's really interesting.
Yeah. No, definitely. I love that her seizures seem to be brought on by gay thoughts.
Yeah. Basically.
Honestly, the scene where they're making out on the couch, and then, like, it's, like, it's very explicit, like, just, like, by the way. I mean, it was horrifying, but also because, like, you know, you don't realize that it's not literally happening. So within, like, what you think is happening is, like, her and, like, Anya, like, literally almost start, like, having sex together on the couch, and then the snake comes in. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't even know what to say about that. That was just like...
Yeah, I mean, ugh. The snake, too, is the religious iconography of it all, right? What would you manifest? If you could manifest anything.
I don't know. That's a great question. I would manifest your apartment all ready for move-in.
Thank you. I would try to start small with something like that, and then I would manifest, I don't know, just, like, ending world hunger, wage inequality, saving the rainforest, saving
the environment. I would manifest 60 really fast.
I would manifest the ozone back into the atmosphere. The ozone
actually
layer.
Manifesting the rainforest is a great idea.
Yeah, there's so much that you can. She's about to be unstoppable. She's just got to get through biology. She's gonna learn so much in her biology major.
Oh yeah. Oh, you're so right. The idea of manifesting a sentient being, I find very, very creepy.
It's
just
uncanny.
Like, it's very uncanny. It's hard to imagine that that thing would have free will and not just be an extension of your own will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's kind of that idea, you have right? She's gonna have to live with that, but also she's, like, fine with it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would like to think that Anya just was away and has come back. But it is interesting, too, because with her baby brother as well, it's like, you know, is there a way that they could have just been like, put him back in the bathtub? Like, don't put him underwater. I don't know.
Well, they didn't even try. That's the problem.
They didn't even try. Yeah.
That is the problem.
Yeah. And you see the dynamic between Thelma and her mother, and presumably also father as a child, where the baby disappears and the mother isn't like, I wonder where the baby crawled off to. She, like, goes to Thelma and, like, starts shaking her and is like, what did you do to him?
Yeah, it's immediately accusatory. And that's the first time that's depicted as the very first time that something's ever happened.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So why did you immediately blame her?
Like, I don't know.
But horror movies too love to do the creepy little child with magical powers. That's something that horror movies have been doing for decades and decades,
that
right?
That's true. Yeah.
So if you're viewing this as a horror movie, it kind of makes sense, right? Like, where it's like, yeah, my like creepy child with supernatural powers. But in all, but I mean, this, the whole point of this movie is showing the other side to that, where it's like, this is like a little girl who just needed love and support. And then she could have grown up to end nuclear war.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
she can do whatever she wants.
Within her I'm going to say that's within her powers.
I would think so. Yeah. It really is like she is all powerful. She is a deity. I do like thinking about this kind of like power, because it is just very, again, very sinister, as I've already said before. I mean, partly because of the things that you are creating, but also in the sense that like her grandmother is saying, I think it would be very easy to have like intrusive thoughts or a bad dream, or just like, you know, sometimes your mind wanders and you have things like setting your dad on fire, which didn't really seem 100% intentional.
Yeah.
Or like the grandma giving herself cancer, presumably. Like, there's also the question of, was the grandma just like predisposed for cancer and then kind of assumed that she did that to herself? Or is that just something that happened? Like, how would you know what you are manifesting and what you are just like experiencing anymore?
Right. Exactly. Man. Can we talk about the dad's death for a second? Because it's the irony of like water, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. Right.
Yes.
Like,
okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to mention this real quick, that there is a scene before this scene where Anya and Thelma are bonding. Thelma's like, funny story, like when I was a child, my dad held my hand over a flame until like my flesh started singeing, and then like took it away and was like, that's what it's like in hell all the time. And then Anya was like, that's a very disturbing thing to say. And Thelma's like, no, my dad's really nice, actually. And then he catches on fire.
Burns, yeah. Both like a nod to all of his you're gonna go to hell references.
Yeah.
And also, again, just the irony of like thinking that you're right and that makes you like unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, you can be in an area where, in theory, like, everyone should have your back. Everything should be going according to plan. Catching on fire in the middle of a lake is, like, normally the best place that you could possibly catch on fire. It's like, I'll just jump overboard. Everything will be fine. I will not be burning anymore. The second he surfaces for air, like, right back to being on fire. There's no escaping it. You can't get out of this one.
Right?
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting too that he chose, I mean, like, obviously he didn't have a ton of choice in this situation, but he didn't want to burn to death. He chose to drown, in a sense.
In this context, where he's been talking about burning in hell so much, it's like he's trying to choose to not do that.
Yeah. Right?
So I guess you can make your inference about that.
Mm-hmm. Her relationship too with her mother, I think, is also really interesting, because it is her father who ends up dying by her power and her mother who is benefits from it in a way. It's like, up to this moment, we see that like Thelma is really unable to engage with her mother at all. Like, she doesn't want to answer her phone calls. She doesn't want to talk to her on the phone for long periods of time, and really leans on her father to like be her confidant. But in the moment where she like realizes that she hurt Anya, it's not her dad who she calls, it's her mom.
Yeah.
Gay things. I want to talk more about Anya and Thelma's relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say about it. I just really liked watching it develop. I thought it was very sweet.
It kind of follows like the traditional romance plot line at the start until things start going wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even with the seizures, it's not so tense in the moment. Like, when Anya's around, there's like a deep sense of calm in the movie.
Yeah. Definitely.
Even in the scenes where she's getting spirited away, you know, which I only caught glimpses of while I was skipping all the flashing lights.
Well, she is screaming. You did miss that.
I did miss the scream. But the scenes where I did see it was like the quiet apartment. It's a little bit creepy, but it's also calm.
Yeah. I would have described it as eerie, I suppose.
I think that that's fair, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to think, fuck Thelma's dad. This is something that just happened naturally between them. The moments of Anya reaching out to Thelma, like, in the theater and kissing her and, you know, wanting to spend time with her. Those were all very genuine emotions that she was having. And it's not something that Thelma could have manifested because she's so in the closet.
I feel like she manifested her own acceptance of the feelings.
Oh, I like that.
Because it's like all the moments where she's experiencing seizures or supernatural events surrounding Anya, they all, for the most part, occur when she's either thinking about how she's hurt Anya or when she's thinking about how she's repressing her feelings for her.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's like when she's accepting the feelings and everything, then all is fine. And she's happy with her girlfriend at school outside on in the grass, right? Yeah. And everything is resolved.
So the moral of the story is let your daughter be gay or else you'll catch on fire.
You have to love and support your kids. You can't force them to be something that they're not.
You know, with the religious aspect of the movie too, like, you cannot subjugate your child into being something that they're not.
Yeah.
They are their own thing with free will.
Yep, exactly. And too, like, the power of using manifestation to live your dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to, you don't have to be evil with it. You can just live your dream.
Yeah. And yeah, that was where I saw a lot of comparisons to Carrie, because for Carrie, it's like all this horrible stuff happens to you and then you do a lot of horrible things and then you die. And instead of the horrible things happen, but you are able to control your power and create a space for yourself in the world. And there's a little bit more agency with that.
Yeah. Just because you're an all-powerful psychic being doesn't mean you need to be drugged and murdered.
Yes.
Also, this movie is very much a the power of gay people movie.
Yes.
Gay love is like transformative.
Yeah.
In a way. It is something that's magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not something to be afraid of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Even with like Carrie and like, again, I've only seen half of Carrie, which I think is just like a really funny tidbit. Yeah, that's a movie where I think that it was relatable for like a queer audience because she is so othered. Like it's something that she kind of can't even comprehend. It just seems to be something that like people see in her.
Yeah.
And even though she can't, she doesn't understand why it's happening. So, you know what? I'm happy that this is a, like a gay movie. I think it really brings it all together, you know? Like, I don't think it, obviously I probably wouldn't even watched it if Thelma was straight, but just like having her be sapphic makes it all the more powerful.
I agree. Did you read anything about the director?
I did not.
The director is Joachim Trier, not to be confused with Lars von Trier, who we have also talked about on the podcast many a time.
Not him.
Who is a Norwegian / Danish film director who used to be like a professional skateboarder.
Whoa.
Who got his start in cinema by literally recording himself doing like 6 skateboard tricks
and editing it. Let's go gnarly, brother.
Yeah. And he's
What skateboarders say.
He's made a couple of other films, but this is the only one that I had personally heard of. Some of his other movies that are more widely known are Oslo, August 31st, Louder Than Bombs, and in 2021, the movie The Worst Person in the World came out.
Mm.
And yeah, they're all obviously Norwegian dramas. Why Thelma?
Yeah.
Apparently all of his movies are like kind of sad and existential and have a lot to do with identity in some way, shape, or form. So it kind of makes sense, I guess, given that background, that if you're exploring identity in your film, you're going to explore identity in a lot of different ways. And sexuality is one part of that, right? Mm-hmm. But I was just like, this seems a little interesting because I think that this is the only like LGBT themed movie that he's ever made. From what I can see anyway.
Right.
Also, like all of his movies have in some way, shape, or form to do with suicide, it seems like.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, that's a prevalent theme. I guess his newest, The Worst Person in the World, doesn't really have to, but all the other ones do.
With the seizures too, I don't know what it is. I thought the connection to like having seizures used to be like maybe you're being possessed by gods or demons. I thought that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Just because of the religious overtones of the movie, but also like Joan of Arc was thought to actually have seizures potentially that were then viewed as like communication with God. And then I was also thinking about Benedetta, but I don't, did she faked her seizures? Or her possessions.
Yes.
Yeah.
She did. Yeah. But I don't think she had seizures. Maybe yeah. I didn't read the whole Wikipedia. You and Jude fucking did. I didn't. I was like, oh, I don't right, have it right. in me to
no,
do
No, I think she was faking having, like, possessions yes. with spirits.
But she was but, not yeah, faking I was, eating those little meats and cheeses.
She
was faking being vegan.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
The parallel, too, between the seizures with being possessed by demons or with being some sort of, like, sin, right? Mm, being connected yeah. with some sort of sin is interesting when the seizures are also caused by being gay yeah. and repressing your homosexuality. Yes. It's kind of this dual-edged interpretation where it's like, yeah, people also saw gay people as being demonic, but at the same yeah. time, she's having the seizures because she's repressing it, right?
Yeah.
So isn't that the thing that's evil all along?
Yeah.
Just no, saying.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's the duality too of like, oh, it was seizures could either be possession by gods or possessions by demons. So like, you know, if you're having seizures, as soon as you start doing something that doesn't gel with what everybody wants you to do, it's like now it's a demon possessing you. It's not the Lord yeah. or whatever. Man.
Yep.
But man. She said, it's me doing this.
It's me. It's me being gay that's doing
it's
this.
It's me being gay. Can't stop me. I've had enough thoughts.
We've had enough thoughts. I really like this movie. It's one of those ones that you can just kind of sit down and pick at if you really yeah. want to.
Yeah.
And it's also a movie nice that movie. I feel like I would like on a rewatch as well. And yes. that I would get probably more out of on a rewatch. But again, skipping like 5 minutes in the middle for my yeah. flashing light sensitivity. So I don't yeah. literally throw up and or pass out.
I know. Where's the like epileptic safe version of this?
Right? I think it's so fucked up. Again, I don't have epilepsy, but I do have a sensitivity to flashing lights and they make me yeah. very dizzy.
I don't have a sensitivity to flashing lights and I like covered one of my eyes just to help with all of it because it's a lot.
Yeah. It's worse, dare I say, than Utena, which was previously today, Utena was the worst thing I'd watch for gays gays with regard to flashing lights.
All right,
I was just gonna say because I didn't even know that Anthony turned into the fucking sword.
That was so funny
until you told me because I couldn't fucking watch the damn show because there's so many flashing lights.
You know, yeah, and she didn't turn into the sword.
They pulled the sword.
They pulled the sword out of her. Yes, I love that you didn't know that. Oh my god. Well, we've previously talked about as a joke. Because this, you can't actually do this, but ranking all of our episodes, like all of the content of our episodes from gayest to least gay.
This is pretty high up there. This
would
like,
be very high up there.
This is like a 9 out of 10. This is a 10 out of 10. Like it's like high up there on the gay scale.
High up there. I would still, that would be fun to do. If we ever did live streams, that would be a very silly live stream to do. It would take forever.
The gayest tier list of all the shit that we've watched for gays gays.
Nana, very gay.
Oh, that's like above the tiers is yeah. the thing.
We also then will do the light sensitivity warning ranking.
Yeah.
This gets number one, Utena, number two. I don't know any of the others.
I think that that's it, honestly.
Okay, yeah, I think so.
I don't think everybody there's else anything gets a pass. Else. I'm looking through our list right now to see. Sailor Moon's probably up there, actually.
Yeah. There's not enough. I would have had to take notes on this, but also I do love a moment, a gaze moment where I find out that you've missed something significant.
Like this one was not my fault.
this one was not your fault. It's much more funny when it is your fault.
God,
you're allowed though.
Thanks.
I'm sorry. I love you so much.
No, it's fine. I love you too. Erin, we have to put Thelma and Louise on the list because I want to talk about Thelma and Louise in comparison with our favorite. Said loosely, our favorite Yuri manga, Gunjo.
Oh, yeah.
Because at reading the plot of Thelma and Louise, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I was like, I would love this.
Let's go.
So, yeah.
Dude, I love Gunjo.
I know.
That's nice grubby anime. Or, well, not anime. Not anime manga. Nice grubby manga.
Yeah. I know. Ooh, it's so good. I would recommend, if you haven't seen Thelma, to give it a watch. I thought it was really good. Yeah,
it's on Tubi. You can watch it for free.
Yes.
If you so desire. Sorry, also, we're not sponsored by, well, anything, but not Tubi either. It's been convenient for the last couple of episodes.
Wait, did you say Tubi our sponsor?
No, I said we're not sponsored by Tubi or anything.
No, you're good. I was just wondering if you were making another joke, like, about us being sponsored by HBO Max.
No, because never again. You can't. The ultimate betrayal.
This is what I've been saying. We can't say we're sponsored by anybody or anything at any time because it's all bad. I can say that we're sponsored by Gay Spite.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's nothing else that we can be sponsored by.
We're sponsored by Pepperjack and Leonard going meow, meow, meow.
Until someone just like sends us $50 and is like,
yeah.
Can I be a gay sponsor? And then we'll write them a hype post.
For sure.
And perhaps a jingle.
What if somebody got us a $50 gift card to HBO Max?
No.
We don't want that. That's a joke. It is Pride Month.
It is.
Where's our corporate sponsorship?
It's Pride Month and I fucking forgot that I had a gay podcast. During Pride Month.
That's okay. I went out last weekend. I was just taking a walk and I was like, wow, the gays are out today. Everybody's wearing their like Pride stuff. And then I got home and I was like, oh, it was the Brooklyn Pride Parade.
Whoops. You missed it.
I missed it. That's okay.
I went to the gay pride here.
Oh, yeah. I know. That looked like so much fun.
I had so much fun.
On the Ferris wheel.
If you feel like it, you should come next year. It's a blast.
Perhaps I will.
It's not even a Ferris wheel. It's like a fucking 10-minute gondola ride that takes you over top of the entire Pride Festival. Oh. You like ride in like it's like a ski lift.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And we got to see Peaches, who I didn't even know about. And Hoops was like, you didn't even know about Peaches? And I was like, I didn't even know about Peaches. She was slaying and singing all of her pussy songs. And my personal favorite moment was when she was like, this is a song about my pussy in the pandemic. And then the lyrics were like, my pussy wears a mask. My pussy wears a mask. And I was like, this is amazing.
Incredible.
And then I was like, this is like really cool. I wonder how long she's been doing this. And then like literally as I had that thought, she screamed, thank you, everybody. I'm 56.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is so great. Anyway, watch Thelma be gay. Manifest your girlfriends, everybody.
Yeah.
Good luck manifesting your girlfriends.
Good luck with it. This Pride Month?
Yeah, manifest this Pride
girlfriend.
Month.
This Pride Month is sponsored by Manifesting a Girlfriend.
It's true. And I support all of you out there that are looking to do it.
Yeah.
That's all.
Man, go off and drink and swear with your girlfriend.
Yeah. Smoke weed with your three girlfriends.
Oh, no. They smoke
These
weed?
These are my three weed-smoking girlfriends they that I manifested. Weed?
Oh, I love that. Okay, we gotta sign off.
We gotta sign off. Thank you for joining us on this rambly return to the podcast. We'll be back next week.
Yeah. Wow. For once.
To talk actually. About Taxi, which is not gay, but it but it is starring Queen Latifah, who is gay and is my celebrity crush. So Erin was like, we should do this. And I was like, you know what? I've never seen Taxi, actually. Yes. I would love to do this.
Yes.
So
it you know what? It qualifies for the podcast. You can send us a request that is just like, this person is in this movie and this person is Sapphic. We will do it.
We did Twilight. I think about this Twilight. All the time. The Twilight episode is one of my favorites of all time.
Where is Twilight on the gay ranking?
It's negative.
No, I disagree. We got to do this. We got to do it live.
All right.
No, I'm kidding.
We'll set up a time as soon as we build our VTuber persona.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Perfect. After I, oh my God, actually putting the episodes on YouTube is something that I want to do and I think about doing. And then like, it's just, the files are huge. They would take so long to export.
Anyway, again, thank you for listening. Join us next week for Taxi. If you have seen Taxi and have thoughts, or if you've seen Thelma and have thoughts, or Thelma and Louise, you can email us at erin@gaysgays.com or message us on Twitter at gaysgays. We also are always taking recommendations and just your musings. Would love to hear them. Yeah.
For sure, for sure.
The biggest thanks in the world to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Noon for letting us use their songs Look in Love and Do Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro. You should go buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com. Until then, I will be manifesting world peace.
You know what I'm going to manifest? The outro theme. Oh, I'm doing it. Oh, it's coming.
Bye.
Yeah.